A medical student walks into a psychiatric ward for what should be a routine overnight shift. She's been warned, don't leave, don't share personal details, don't bring anything sharp. But the real danger isn't listed in any orientation manual. It's standing right beside her in the form of an ex-boyfriend she'd rather forget, and waiting inside among the patients is the former best friend who once told her, "You should be the one locked up here." What unfolds over the next 12 hours will blur the lines between caretaker and patient, between memory and madness, between the person you think you are and the darkness you've been running from your entire life. Amy Brenner has spent 8 years trying to outrun a single moment. In high school, her best friend Jade transformed from sleepover confidant to something darker: black hair, heavy makeup, theft, breaking into houses. But what terrified Amy most wasn't Jade's descent. It was her own secret companion, a little blonde girl in a pink dress who appeared in mirrors, whispering violence. Break the window. Hurt them. Amy named her Sarah and told no one. The breaking point came over a stolen math test. When their teacher, Mr. Riordan, discovered his exam missing, Jade promised to handle it by kidnapping him, binding him in his basement, planning to stage his murder as a robbery. When Amy discovered the truth, Sarah appeared more vividly than ever, urging her to help. Instead, Amy called the police. They saved Mr. Riordan after 6 hours. Jade spent 2 years on Ward D, the very place where Amy now finds herself assigned for her medical school rotation. The night shift begins with uncomfortable reunions, her ex-boyfriend Cameron replacing her expected partner, and Dr. Beck, the surprisingly young attending physician, showing them around. Then Amy sees Jade, now a patient again, watching with knowing eyes. The ward houses Miguel, who believes God is his father, elderly Mary, endlessly knitting, Spider Dan, convinced he has arachnid powers, and Damon Sawyer, a serial killer secured in isolation. Then Cameron vanishes. Amy hears choking from Miguel's room and sees blood seeping under the door. Except when she alerts Dr. Beck, the floor is spotless and Miguel sleeps peacefully. Beck suggests she's tired, seeing things. But Will, a patient admitted for hearing violent commands, confirms he heard Cameron screaming. Amy discovers Will's hidden stash of untaken medications and learns he's actually Marcus Wheeler, an investigative reporter researching suspicious deaths on the ward. Security footage reveals Jade and Will meeting secretly, her whispering encouragement for him to stay clear-thinking by avoiding his pills. In a place designed to treat delusions, who's manipulating whom? Mary's violent episode reveals the truth. She screams that Damon Sawyer is a murderer before being sedated. When Amy finds Mary's empty room, she pieces it together. Damon Sawyer and his girlfriend robbed banks using beer bottles they claimed contained acid. The girlfriend's crimes match Jade's admission records exactly. The young Dr. Beck isn't Beck at all. Amy's roommate texts about meeting that sweet old man Dr. Beck at her own internship. Amy short-circuits the security system, but investigates the locked seclusion room 1 instead of fleeing. Inside, a makeshift morgue containing Mary, Cameron, and two others. The fake Dr. Beck appears. Let me introduce myself properly. I'm Damon Sawyer. Jade and Nurse Ramona join him. The nurse is actually Nicole, facing involuntary commitment. They murdered the real Dr. Beck and Ramona, orchestrating this elaborate night. Jade's connection runs deeper. Damon was her mother's drug dealer, who helped teenage Jade stage her mother's death as an overdose. Their plan? Sedate Amy and burn the ward. When Nicole voices guilt, Damon bashes her skull with a paperweight while Jade watches unmoved. Trapped against the locked door, Amy faces certain death until Spider Dan emerges from shadows, strangling Damon with dental floss, his web, while Amy drives Mary's knitting needle deep into Jade's ribs. When maintenance worker Chuck unlocks the door at 6 a.m., he finds 5 dead, Will barely alive from Jade's drug cocktail, and Amy standing calmly amid the chaos while Jade hysterically accuses her of being the dangerous one. 1 year later, the surface looks normal. Amy completed medical school, Will survived, and now writes a book about that night. They're dating, building a future together. But Amy's little girl never left. Sarah appears regularly, her suggestions growing darker. Sabotage Cameron's fellowship application, which Amy did. Stab Jade deliberately rather than in self-defense, which she confirms. Over dinner with Will, Sarah materializes again. Kill him before he leaves you, Amy. You know he will. The most chilling revelation isn't about Jade's conspiracy or Damon's violence. It's that Amy might be the most dangerous person in the story, walking free while the ward's doors remain locked behind her. Sanity isn't about what you see. It's what you do about it. Ward D presents mental illness as a spectrum where we all exist, some just closer to the edge. Jade's bipolar disorder and Amy's hallucinations both stemmed from real trauma, yet both faced whispers toward violence, one through murder plots, the other through betrayals disguised as self-defense. The ward mirrors society's desire for clear categories, sick versus healthy, dangerous versus safe. Dr. Beck's wisdom that patients are human beings who have conditions, not conditions that happen to be human, cuts both ways. We should see humanity in those struggling, yet humanity includes capacity for deception and violence regardless of diagnosis. The novel's most unsettling achievement is making us complicit in Amy's self-deception. We sympathize with her fears, never suspecting she might be as disturbed as those she fears. The girl in the pink dress isn't a symptom to medicate away. She's Amy's violent impulses given form, allowing her to commit unthinkable acts while maintaining her self-image as victim. We've grown comfortable with monsters who announce themselves. Ward D disturbs because its most dangerous character has mastered normalcy's performance. Amy orders lattes, discusses book deals, navigates social scripts flawlessly, all while a hallucinated child urges murder. The horror isn't in gothic hospitals or dramatic breakdowns. It's in checkout lines and office meetings, hidden behind acceptable behavior. The question isn't whether Amy will act on Sarah's suggestions again. She already has. It's whether anyone will notice before she does. Jade was locked away for violence while Amy walks free, not because Amy is saner, but because she's better at hiding it. She frames sabotage as justified response, stabbing as self-defense, hallucinations as manageable quirks. Locked psychiatric doors create an illusion of safety, suggesting danger is contained and labeled. But we leave countless doors open. We trust the medical student, the successful graduate, the trauma survivor who seems to cope. Sometimes that trust is warranted. Will investigates genuinely. Spider Dan finds clarity. But sometimes, trust allows violence to walk freely among us, whispering to itself in mirrors, waiting for the world to look away and the little girl in the pink dress to say, "Now."